From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up, should electric bikes be allowed on the American River Parkway? Plus, the great session guitarist Michael Landau coming to town with his own blues rock band. Just last month, he was on tour with James Taylor. And on this week's Sound Advice, new recordings of classical music and classical-related music, including a piece by Philip Glass and a song from the CD Katrina Ballads. But first, it's time for our weekly conversation with Marcus Bertone, columnist at the Sacramento Bee. We talk about some of the top stories in news and sports. Marcus, welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with the topic that never stops giving the arena. Mayor Kevin Johnson has convened a huge regional commission, 60 members.
60 members.
Some must be saying, how come I'm not on it? But we'll set that aside. What can we reasonably expect from this huge commission that's been convened to figure out a way to pay for a new arena?
You know, I expect a lot of the names on there will be on for symbolic purposes, to give the impression of a regional process here. It still remains to be seen what can come from a regional process. What could a Placer County or an El Dorado County, for example, where you have wealth and you have concentrations of Kings season ticket holders, what could they do with respect to bringing what they need, which is money, to the process? No one seems to know the answer to that question, or if they know, they don't want to talk about it right now. I think it is a departure from past years where, for whatever reason, Sacramento City and County attempted to do this alone, and as we know, for 10 years, these processes crashed and burned. So they're trying to do things differently, but it just remains to be seen what some of these other counties can actually bring.
But if you get all these supervisors and city council members from places outside of Sacramento but still in the region, they can say all they want. Yeah, funding, we need something like that. But what can they realistically deliver?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know right now, Jeffrey. I don't know what the answer to that question is. What I'm trying to determine is what types of conversations are going on behind the scenes. Real conversations about what these counties could do. There's going to be a funding gap, and the money's going to have to come from somewhere, because they're not going to go to a sales tax. They've already taken that off the table pretty much. So you need to find it from somewhere, and it's unclear to me right now what the process that these counties could use to raise revenue, raise money for the arena process, and why they would.
Now, I've heard talk about maybe a hotel occupancy tax, a car rental tax, and that seems like an indirect tax.
Indirect.
And, of course, locals don't pay it. But nevertheless,
right,
it could still be construed as having an impact on the local economy. And I couldn't help but notice that one of the figurehead people on the commission is State Senator Ted Gaines,
yes,
who is usually not very well inclined towards tax increases of any kind whatsoever. And, you know, I couldn't help but wonder what he, of all people, would be bringing to that public funding process.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the hotel and rental car tax has been used in other cities. Kansas City, for example, used them. And at least if you believe the public officials, you know, one of whom wrote an opinion piece for the Sacramento Bee, and she said that the fears that people had about the hotel and rental car tax proved to be unfounded, that it just didn't prove to be that big of a deal. And so it will be brought to bear, and since it is an indirect tax, perhaps Mr. Gaines would be able to find some comfort there. It's not enough, though, and particularly in Sacramento, we don't have the concentration of hotels or the usage of rental cars to produce the big number that is needed.
Not Orlando or Las Vegas.
We're not Orlando or Las Vegas, and that's whenever people bring the name Orlando, Las Vegas into the discussion with Sacramento, it's apples and oranges. We're not a tourist destination, so we can't draw upon those numbers aren't going to produce a big figure, and that's what you're going to need is a big dollar amount to get this done.
My guest is Marcus Bertone, Sacramento Bee columnist. It just occurred to me this morning that Mayor Johnson might well be happy that Dave Jones is now insurance commissioner, yes, as opposed to city councilman or state assemblyman, because he was kind of the chief rabble-rouser against measures Q&R in 2006. But there isn't a big car insurance element here.
No, there's no car insurance element that we know of, and Davey is otherwise occupied these days. And, you know, he did, Mr. Jones did, oppose in the past. You know, the argument that I made was that that opposition, while it got some publicity, wasn't nearly as damaging as when the King's owners walked away from the deal. That's what really killed the deal in 06. So, yes, he's otherwise occupied. There doesn't seem to be any obvious opposition to it. I'm sure there will be. It's Sacramento, after all. That's what we do, is oppose things. But the major players who were involved the last time are otherwise occupied.
There was a poll came out this morning switching to the state budget, which, of course, is of pressing significance, in particular to the people of Sacramento. Significant majorities of Californians, not just a small majority, but significant majorities of Californians said, we support Governor Brown's budget plan, which includes billions of dollars in tax extensions. Right. Significant majority supports the proposal to put the tax issue to the voters, but the majority also opposes said tax extensions.
Yes.
Well, what can we make of all this?
We're kind of nutty as people in California. And that's the thing is, we've, just from my perspective, having grown up in California and lived here my entire life, that beginning when I was in high school in 1978 with Proposition 13, it's been a steady creation of obstacles to leadership, and so it's difficult to get anything done now because nobody really has the power to do anything, and the initiative industrial complex has become a force where, you know, there's no consensus and there's no will and there's no ability to really get anything done. And I've really come to believe that when people say, let the people decide, well, the people don't know. A lot of times the people don't know, or people are driven by self-interest. We're all driven by self-interest, right? And that's really sort of where we're at in Sacramento right now is the whole idea of shared interests are obliterated by special interests, and so, you know, opinion polls matter probably too much now, and people can't seem to make up their minds in terms of what they want, what the problem is, and how it should be fixed.
Marcus Bertone, Sacramento Bee columnist. Let's turn to sports now. Maybe the biggest, one of the biggest stories in Northern California sports has been the season-ending injury to the San Francisco Giants' young star Buster Posey.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of talk. It still continues as regards whether baseball's rules need to be changed to protect people like catchers like Posey, or should we just stay old school and let the pitchers take care of it later on and penalize anyone that bashes into someone like Buster Posey?
Well, I mean, the unfortunate part about it is that an elite player was taken out, and he was a player who was just at the beginning of what appears to be a really successful career. You know, just the name Buster Posey really struck.
It's
a great baseball name. It's a great name. It's really struck a nerve when you would go to the games. You see these little kids, and they had a little Posey. I mean, just the name Posey. It sounds so lovely in so many ways.
Yes.
And you know, the guy has rosy cheeks, for crying out loud. And you know, he is very valuable in the sense that he was the brain on the field, and that he was strategizing in terms of what pitch to throw. So he's basically this youngster who is the field general on the field, and also an offensive force, and also a marketing force. And the fact that he was taken out in a really unnecessary play by a marginal player who may or may not be in the big leagues a month from now, will probably be back in the minor leagues, that's what's so galling and so frustrating about the whole thing. So what do you do about it? I can't think of a rule that you could institute that would work. Because if you say that you can't run into the catcher ever, then catchers are going to start to block the plate whether they have the ball or not, and then you create other injury possibilities. I really do think, I've heard people say, and I really agree with it, that what needs to change as opposed to a rule in baseball is the culture of baseball, and the idea that this is just part of the game, that just obliterating somebody's part of the game, and maybe teaching young players that if there is a lane to slide in, and there was in this case, to take that lane as opposed to blowing up the catcher, which this kid obviously made up his mind he was going to do, and he did. And now we see the consequences of it.
But if that part of baseball is basically a potential contact sport, maybe the catcher should be outfitted like football players.
Well, he's outfitted now. I don't think that more armor would have protected him. The problem was his leg was bent in a way that human bones are not meant to be bent.
Video, which was shown many, many
video
times.
Video was horrific, and there was an Associated Press photograph particularly where at the point of impact, it looks like Buster Posey's wearing his left foot on backwards. You know, it was gruesome in many ways. And the problem is, if you've had an ankle injury, and I have, when I was in college, I popped my ankle in a softball game. It's never been the same since. I mean, my left ankle turns really easily, and so now the issue is now, particularly with the ligaments torn on each side of the ankle, is going to be his ability just to squat. And if you can't squat, then you can't be a catcher. If you can't be a catcher, in his case, that's what makes him valuable, in that he's an offensive force who also can run the game, essentially. And there are very few people like him, and those who have been like him with that skill set have been ended up in the Hall of Fame. Mm. So that's the unfortunate part about it, is, you know, what do you do to protect this asset as a player? And you may have to move him away from the position that makes him valuable.
Finally, Marcus, a few months ago, the Sacramento Bee laid off a few dozen people. And at that time, I asked someone who worked at the paper, I said, "Do you think this is it?" And she said, "Yeah, we all believe that this is it." But then, of course, there was another round of layoffs. Hundreds of people have been laid off from the paper. What's the mood now at the paper about the state of the Sacramento Bee and the larger company, the McClatchy Company?
Well, I think people are concerned, obviously. You know, whenever you have to part company with employees, it's never a good thing. The folks who left, talented and had put in a lot of years of service, and it's not pleasant. There's no way to put a pretty bow on it. It's a reflection of the reality that we're in. Speaking for myself, and I think that other people share my opinion, is I'm resolute that this is a calling. This is the profession that I chose for myself. This is the job that I want to do. This is the job that I love and derive joy from, and I'm going to do it, and that's it. And you know, there are issues with related to the newspaper industry that are out of our control right now. The business model is evolving. I do get irritated when I keep hearing people say, "Well, newspapers are going to die." There's no proof that newspapers are going to die. There, a very small percentage of newspapers have closed over the years. And typically, those who say the newspaper are going to die work in television. And television, being the cowards that they are, they never report on themselves. They never report their market loss or the people that they've laid off. Or, I mean, I look at every television station in this town, and all these great reporters who used to work there don't work there anymore. You never hear about that on the air. So yeah, we at the paper, we report on ourselves, but we're going to be around, and I promise to all my television colleagues that my foot is going to be up your ass forever, and that's just the way it is. This is a competitive business, and we're not backing down.
And when you had your column about Fabian Nunez, you gave them all a pretty good lead.
Absolutely. And I wrote to one of my TV colleagues, is like, "Get used to tasting my dust, because that's not going to change." So I get a little ticked off about that. Absolutely. And we're not backing down. So the message is, we're not backing down.
Marcus Bertone, Sacramento Bee columnist. He joins us once a month on Insight. Marcus, thanks for being with us today. You're listening to Insight. When we come back, should electric bicycles be allowed on the American River Parkway? You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. And Talk of the Nation today, what we've learned about preventing and treating PTSD. Also, the pros and cons of fracking. It's a controversial way to get natural gas from deep below ground, but critics say the cost is too steep. It's Talk of the Nation at 11, right after Insight. The American River Parkway is about to turn 50, and while you see all kinds of people and activities in Sacramento's long and famous park, one thing you don't see is motorized traffic. But some cyclists think electric bikes should be allowed. We're going to talk about that now. Our first guest is Max Mack. He's a competitive cyclist and director of the Health is Wealth road cycling team. He supports allowing electric bikes or electric assist bicycles on the American River Parkway. Max, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you are an old school cyclist. You are quite happy and have done well in riding bicycles without motorized assist. Why do you think electric assist bicycles belong in the parkway?
Well, there's always a time and place for everything. There's a time and place for me to be competing. And when I do commute from point A to point B, it's nice to be someplace where it's safe and uninhibited, unencumbered by vehicular traffic.
In other words, you're referring to roads there being not safe, which is where you currently would have to ride an electric assist bicycle.
You know, for myself, I have no problem riding on the surface streets, but I'm not everybody. No. And the majority of the public that's out there that likes to ride, that likes to get recreate or likes to commute, there's such vagueness between where cyclists belong on the road or whether they belong on the road and a place where cyclists can travel from point A to point B without vehicular traffic makes it much safer for them.
Also with us is Mike Majors, who's owner of the Electric Bike Shop. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
And you've brought along, or Max has brought along, I'm not sure which of you, an actual electric assist bicycle.
Correct.
Yeah. Could you describe it for us, especially
sure.
the motor, so people have got a concrete idea of what we're talking about?
Well, this bike is a HEB electric glide. It's basically made for commuting. It has a lithium ion battery and utilizes a planetary gear brushless electric motor.
And for the most part, it looks like a regular bicycle, albeit a fairly sturdy one.
Yes.
But there's this sort of black, well, not really a cylinder, but a cylinder-ish thing.
That's the battery.
That's the battery.
Correct.
How heavy is the battery?
It's about 7 pounds.
And how much noise does this thing make when you're riding it?
Virtually none, just a slight hum.
Virtually none, just a slight hum. Well, that leads me to probably a common objection that people might have to electric bikes in the parkway, and that is that one reason why people like to go there is to get to nature, and the possibility of a motor might be intrusive. But I guess, Max, you're saying that's not an issue?
It's not an issue at all, because the motor is, you hear more wind blowing by your ears than you do the motor at all. It is a hum. It's like the sound of a Prius moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, it nevertheless, it's a motorized element on the parkway. Mike, what would you say to someone who says, you know, I don't care if I hear it or not, it just doesn't belong here?
Yes. Well, it's an electric assist bicycle. You can be ridden like a bicycle without the throttle, or if you're going up a hill, going straight into a headwind. The electric assist is great for people, especially with disabilities. People who are older in age who are having joint issues, much as my reason for getting into this in the first place. I've had 4 ACL reconstructs on my knees. I was told by my orthopedic surgeon to ride a bicycle, but not ride so hard anymore where I'm torquing my knees.
Yeah. Now, we did invite Sacramento County Department of Regional Parks to participate. We weren't able to get a guest today, but we did hear from Janet Baker, the director, and she points out that the 2008 American River Parkway plan specifically prohibits motorized vehicles and scooters. Well, Max, this would appear to fit into that category, would it not?
If this was purely, I can see that being if it was purely a motorized vehicle, but it's a bicycle first with an electric assist motor.
But isn't a motorbike basically a bicycle, but just with a humongous motor?
It is not, because you cannot pedal a motorbike.
Uh-huh.
And pedaling is what you do with this bike with the electric motor engaged or not.
Okay. But Mike, that distinction might be a fine one. The fact that it is still a bicycle, albeit one that has a motor that's helping propel it.
Well, correct. And basically, ultimately, the whole idea of electric assist bicycle is to get people out of their cars. In 2003, the federal government came out with an assembly bill to mandate what a bicycle is and not a motor vehicle. All my bikes that I sell adhere to those guidelines. So they're considered bicycles and not motor vehicles. Again, the whole idea is to get people out of their carbon-emitting cars and onto more earth-friendly transportation. It's a clear cut with CHP, then the county, and local police departments, city police departments, on the public right-of-way. But where there is resistance all over the country, as a matter of fact, on individual city and county bike trails. And again, it's merely an educational process. These are relatively new. The last 2 to 3 years, they've gotten affordable to the average person.
Meaning what? Like how much more would an electric assist bicycle be than the equivalent regular bicycle?
As far as cost-wise goes? Well, I sell bikes anywhere from $500 to $2,500. They're really right in the same range as typical bicycles.
I see. We're talking about electric assist bicycles. Should they be allowed on the American River Parkway? Max Mack is a competitive cyclist and director of the Health as Wealth Road Cycling Team. And Mike Majors is owner of the Electric Bike Shop. Max, have you and others talked with Sacramento County Parks about this issue?
We haven't. Mike can speak to that in terms of speaking with county parks.
Okay.
We are making inroads to speak with various groups so that we can introduce, educate, and inform them about the difference of why this should be allowed, why these bikes should be allowed.
Okay, Mike, what has the county said to you?
I actually talked with the regional director of parks, Ms. Janet Baker. We had a very good conversation, and she is very actually open to the fact and looking into speaking with county council on the legality of these vehicles on the bike trail. We've also been informed that we potentially, I guess with the American River Parkway plan, it's sanctioned basically by the state. So there's ratification by the state legislator and any new developments, any changes in their general plan of the parkway. So I'm trying to do everything I can to work with them to facilitate the use of these bicycles on the bike trail.
Now, in her email to us, Janet Baker also noted that the speed limit for bicycles on the American River Parkway is 15 miles per hour. I'm pretty sure that is widely flouted. But regardless, that's the speed limit. Is speed limit an issue with electric assist bicycles? Are they more likely to go faster?
No. Riding this bicycle over here today, maxing out at about 15 miles an hour, they are governed to go no faster than 15 miles an hour. And like you pointed out, many people exceed that speed limit on the parkway on a regular basis. I know I could.
Well, you said that the bicycle you came over on doesn't go faster than 15 miles per hour, but is that just referring to the motor? Couldn't you, with your pedaling, make it go faster than that?
Oh, without the motor, absolutely.
Without the motor, you could go faster.
Oh, easily. My average speed on the bicycle that for train when I'm out riding in my Lycra, I'm about 19 to 22 miles an hour of training for 2 to 3 hours. So,
but no more than 15.1 miles per hour on the parkway.
That is absolutely correct.
Correct.
I'm glad we ascertained that one. Mm-hmm. Mike Majors, what about an argument that this could be just the thin end of a wedge, that motorized traffic isn't allowed on the parkway, but this is different. This is a real bicycle. You can actually pedal it, and it's a very quiet motor. But couldn't that be the thin end of a wedge that ultimately allows real motorized traffic on?
I mean, I guess you could look at it that way. I would assume that once, if the counties, the local city governments were to adhere to the federal guidelines as far as what a electric assist bicycle is and not a motor vehicle, and they stuck to those guidelines, I don't see there being an issue of another form of transportation kind of able to loophole in and piggyback on that same legislation.
Yeah. Finally, Max Mack, you're a competitive cyclist. You presumably enjoy doing cycling for exercise and for competition. And you, both of you, explained that these electric assist bicycles can be used by people who've got joint problems, who don't feel safe on the roads, and so on. But, you know, I just happened to pluck at random a review of an electric assist bicycle, and the person who reviewed the bike said, "I got to enjoy the outdoors without breaking a sweat." Isn't there a possibility that this could just end up being another lazy way to get exercise?
I don't believe it will, because the battery will eventually run out, and if you use the battery the whole time and you're maxing it out at 15 miles an hour, you're going to still have to pedal the bike home. and get your workout in. And, you know, you'd rather be pedaling the whole while. Mm.
At the same time, you naturally just want to pedal. It feels right. awkward to sit on the bike and not pedal. You find yourself pedaling. It starts the freewheel. You crank it in a high gear, and you're propelling yourself. You're kind of getting on it. You're not building muscle mass per se, not really breaking a sweat, but you're increasing your heart rate, and it's a health benefit for everybody. Basically.
It's getting people ambulatory. You know, even at the front end of it all, it allows people to be introduced into more exercise, and once they start doing that, they'll want to be able to do more, and they'll pedal more on that bike as well.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. That was Max Mack. He's the director of the Health as Wealth Road Cycling Team, and Mike Majors is owner of the Electric Bike Shop. We've been talking about whether electric assist bicycles belong in the American River Parkway. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight. When we come back, the great session guitarist Michael Landau coming to town with his blues rock band. Listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Tomorrow, developer David Taylor will talk about the proposed new arena in Sacramento that he's working on. Also, musician and comedian Neil Innes. His career includes a lot of work with Monty Python, and there's a film about him showing in Sacramento this weekend. The great session guitarist Michael Landau is coming to town this Friday. He's in Auburn with his own blues rock band, but he's perhaps best known in the music business as a session guitarist and has worked with many big names over the years, including James Taylor, Pink Floyd, Joni Mitchell, and Wayne Shorter. We'll talk with Michael Landau in a minute, but first here's one of his songs from the album The Michael Landau Group Live. This is Worried Life Blues.
I'll miss you.
Michael Landau, welcome to Insight.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Well, what's the biggest difference between being a session guitarist and being the man, being the Michael Landau group?
Well, in this group that I have now that we're playing with, there's a lot more improvising going on live, which is what I really love about playing live. And it's just getting together with some great musicians and kind of having a nice moment with the audience and creating something kind of special each night that kind of gets me going.
So more improvisation, but there's also more, I guess, more responsibility on your shoulders because you're the leader of the band as opposed to working for the leader of the band.
Absolutely, yeah, and I have to book all the hotels and do everything else too.
Yeah. How much of your time is split between session work and being your own guy?
These days it's a little bit more being my own guy. I mean, I have different projects. I also have a band with Robin Ford that we're trying to get going these days, and there's a little bit less session work than there was 10 years ago, so it's working out, you know. It's nice to be able to balance out, and I just love going out and playing live. So
yeah. My guest is Michael Landau, guitarist, singer, songwriter. He's touring with his band. He's in Auburn on Friday night. Well, you mentioned Robin Ford, and you and Robin Ford and a couple of others are in a band called Renegade Creation, and you just came out with an album not too long ago by the same name. Let's listen to one of the songs from the album. It's the first track. It's called What's Up.
But all torn down, into the jet stream, with barely a sound. The baby's on fire, she's almost insane. So how can you lose her when you don't know her name?
Now, both you and Robin Ford are singers and guitarists. How did you divvy up the duties in the band Renegade Creation?
That just worked out when we first talked about doing the record. We both had tunes that we wanted to kind of present to the band, and it just ended up being kind of an even split with the songs that Robin wrote and that I wrote. And so, yeah, it just kind of worked out that way.
So no arguments over that one, then?
No.
Now, I just happened to read not long ago that you started playing with Robin Ford a long time ago. In fact, at age 16, you began playing the L.A. club scene, and shortly after toured the West Coast with Robin Ford. So you two go back an awful long way.
We do, yeah. I think I first played with him in 1979. Unbelievable. But it's always been a thrill to play with him, and he's one of my idols, definitely.
And then a few years after that, when you were just 19, you joined Boz Scaggs for a world tour. That must have been a big deal. And wasn't that around the time of Lowdown?
It was. It was right around Silk Degrees, and he was huge, you know, really huge back then. And he was playing big arenas and, you know, big arena tour, and I was 19. It was kind of crazy, yeah.
Yeah. How do you keep your head on when you're a 19-year-old and doing that kind of thing?
Oh, well, I was the young kid, so they definitely kept me in check.
So yeah. That's Boz Scaggs and Robin Ford we talked about. But in fact, if we tried to tabulate all the people you worked with over the years, it would take longer than we have. Of all the people you've worked with, who do you have the fondest memories with?
I was very fortunate to work with like Joni Mitchell when she was recording in the mid '80s, and James Taylor and. Artists like Joni Mitchell, they're just, you know, extremely creative people, and a lot of that rubbed off, and just great to be around and play music with people like that, you know, and
yeah.
James Taylor, and I actually got called to play on a Pink Floyd album in the late 90s, which was a big thrill for me as well.
Yeah, I can imagine that must have been quite an experience. My guest is Michael Landau. Let's listen to another clip from the 2006 record, The Michael Landau Group Live. This song is Good Friend.
Along the way, something changed. Never was the same. I never felt like saying goodbye. She'd be driving down the lake, screaming, fussing, fighting, tearing up the days gone by. Plastic seeds on my dreams, and I feel like I'm leaving a good friend behind. That's alright, that's okay, she's another day, and I still have her thoughts on my mind.
Michael, the feeling of that song is so different from the other two that we've played. Is that unusual for you, that style?
No, I mean, we definitely mix it up live. It's definitely a melting pot when we play live, and that's what that record was that you're playing. There's definitely some blues in there, and there's quite a few instrumentals, actually, that we play live, too, so it gets into more of a jazzy area, and also there's always a little bit of rock and roll in there, too, so...
Yeah.
I just take all the influences.
And that live album is actually a double CD, and it was recorded over a period of a couple of years. Are you still playing all those songs?
A lot of them, actually, yes. I mean, a core of them kind of stay in the set, but we're always adding new things. That is a double live album, and half of that one, is, I believe, is about instrumentals. So, we definitely mix it up and try to... Keep it interesting live.
Now, you mentioned James Taylor. You were just recently on tour with him and just played Carnegie Hall in New York last month. And the concert was billed as Guitar Conversations. What did that mean? What was your role in the guitar conversation with James Taylor?
Yeah, he actually did four nights there. It was the celebration of 120 years of Carnegie Hall. And they were benefits. And the Guitar Conversations night was just James, myself, and Jerry Douglas. And it was mainly about James's influences from guitars. And he actually almost gave like a guitar-style clinic where he would show some of his technique, because he's quite a great guitar player, and he gets overlooked at that. And so he got a chance to kind of put some cameras on his guitars, and you could really see his finger style technique that he has, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think of you as an electric guitarist and of James Taylor as an acoustic guitarist. Do you both play those respective instruments when you play together?
Yeah, he always plays his steel string acoustic, and I always do electric, so I do the electric stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no overlapping there.
Let's listen to one more song from the Michael Landau Group Live double CD. This is the Mighty SB. What is the Mighty SB?
That actually was written in Santa Barbara, and sometimes I just left the title there.
So the Mighty SB is Santa Barbara?
Yeah.
I like that.
I just kept it simple.
Yeah. Finally, Michael Landau, you can be heard on more than 700 albums, including soundtracks. That's really hard to compute.
I know. I started kind of young doing the session work, and it was, you know, there was a lot going on in the 80s and 90s, so. I can't believe it either. It just kind of added up, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that gets to be like almost an album a week.
Back in the day, we were doing that many.
Yeah. Michael Landau, guitarist, singer, and songwriter. He's well known in the music business as a session guitarist and has played with many big names, including just last month, James Taylor. But he's touring with his band, the Michael Landau Group, and they're in Auburn on Friday night. They're playing at the State Theater. Starts at 8. Michael Landau, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And you're listening to Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. When we come back, arts critic and reporter Edward Ortiz joins us for sound advice with some eclectic new classical music recordings, including a piece by Philip Glass and a song from Katrina Ballads. Listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. On Capital Public Radio News today, a big drop in the number of Sacramento area community college students transferring to CSU and UC. And the number going to private schools and out-of-state schools is rising. That story and more on All Things Considered starting at 4. Well, it's time for our weekly music feature, Sound Advice. The first Thursday of the month, we listen to and talk about new recordings in classical music. Joining us today is Edward Ortiz. He's an arts critic, reporter, and CD reviewer at the Sacramento Bee. Edward Ortiz, welcome back to Insight.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're going to start with someone who I wasn't familiar with. Todd Reynolds, his name is.
Todd Reynolds, he's been on the mainly East Coast music scene for a long time. He was trained by Dasha Heifetz when he was in high school, and also as a violin player was second principal violinist for the Rochester Philharmonic. But somewhere along the way, he kind of left the strictly classical fold and started, you know, working with electronic music and doing drum loops and things like that, and working with Bang on a Can and those individuals. And I find him an interesting character because he has a solid classical background, but he also, you know, works with sampling and things like that. So it's kind of this hybrid music that is actually becoming really popular.
And the track we're going to hear is?
The track is,
It's Transamerica, isn't it?
Transamerica. And, it's a track that has some interesting syncopated rhythms and some drum loops there. And then the violin comes in kind of softly. But it's a really bold work, and it kind of gives you an idea of his writing. There's a lot of different influences there.
Okay, let's hear it.
We'll be right back.
So the violinist we hear there is Todd Reynolds, but if I'm not mistaken, the electric guitarist is also Todd Reynolds.
It is. Yeah. And it's actually a two CD set, and the first part of it is his music, and he performs all of the tracks, all of the instruments. And then the second CD is music written by other individuals.
And it says here in the liner notes that that piece, Transamerica, was actually commissioned for a dance work, and it does sound sort of dance-like, doesn't it?
It does have that kind of Rindy Eckert feel to it. You know, you could visualize it pretty easily.
My guest is Edward Ortiz. He's a Sacramento Bee arts critic and reporter, and he joins us this week for sound advice. We're listening to new and recent recordings in classical music and, I guess, classical-related music. Our next artist is someone who's probably the most famous name in 20th century classical music, or
definitely
one of.
So.
Yeah.
Philip Glass, one of my favorites. And this is a very interesting CD because it's a work from 1981 that Philip Glass wrote at a time when he wanted to appeal to a larger audience. And back then, you know, the whole minimalist thing was not something that was playing out really big on film like it is now. And so he wrote Glassworks, and it's interesting to hear this music now because it's kind of aged gracefully.
And the piece is, it's Glassworks, but the actual track we're going to hear from it is Rubric. Okay. Definitely has that distinctive sound of Philip Glass's music.
Doesn't it? Yeah. That repeating ostinato, yes. that's his signature sound.
And that must have been quite a concert. It says here in the liner notes that it took 30 years for Glassworks to be performed in its entirety in New York. I mean, Philip Glass is such a famous New York composer, and this was meant to be the work that would introduce him to a large audience.
Right. It's hard to imagine, because this Glassworks was his best-selling CD. Well, yeah. Actually, in his category is his best-selling CD, so it's hard to imagine something like that not being performed in New York City.
Now we're going to hear some vocal music. This is a CD called Katrina Ballads, and it's music that was composed by Ted Hearn. Who's Ted Hearn?
Ted Hearn is a New York-based composer who writes a lot of, pretty much like Todd Reynolds, has a lot of influences from Bang on a Can and others. And he wrote this one-hour song cycle based totally on transcripts of incidences that happened in the news after Katrina, as well as the prelude to it, which is inspired by a Houston Chronicle article that warned about the possibility of a bad flood in New Orleans back in 2001, actually.
And that real transcript nature of the lyrics in this explains the titles of some of the tracks on Katrina Ballads, which include Dennis Hastert, who we kind of forget about now, but he was a member of Congress at that time. And Brownie, You're Doing a Heck of a Job, and Barbara Bush. But we're going to hear a track that's named after someone else who's not a political person, but he's a well-known musician, but he put his nose into this whole matter.
Right. And the idea behind this one-hour song cycle of 10 songs is that it's supposed to portray how Katrina was perceived by the media and not by the people that were affected by it, which I thought was kind of an interesting take.
And so here's the track called Kanye West.
I hate the way they portray us in the media. You see a black family, it says they're looting you. See a white family, it says they're looking for food. And you know it's been 5 days before
The track's called Kanye West, but it does not feature Kanye West. The tenor is Isaiah Robinson. Be interesting to know what Kanye West made of that.
It would be. And it's interesting to note that usually when there are librettos or things like that, the texts are pretty intensely manipulated. But here you have actually Kanye West's a transcript from him appearing at a live telethon for Katrina Relief in 2005.
Yeah.
And it ends with the famous quote, George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Yeah, it was funny to hear those words, which became quite familiar, those words that he uttered in the context of a song cycle. Well, we've got time for one more piece of music. What is it?
This is David Russell, a classical guitarist who really needs no introduction. He's been around for a long time. And he's doing a piece by Isaac Albanese. And it's from a CD that is all of Albanese's work. It's a wonderful CD, and this is the piece Pavan.
Beautiful flowing music.
It is. And it gives you an idea of David Russell's incredible crystal clear tone. And also he has this quality about him, and it runs throughout this whole CD. The guitar sounds like it's right in front of you and really warm. And a lot of classical guitarists are really good at the technique part, but they're not really good at nailing that kind of tone.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of music on this, and it looks great. Cuba, tango, all sorts of evocatively titled pieces of music. It's by David Russell. He's the guitarist, and it's Spanish music for classical guitar, all by Isaac Albanese. Edward Ortiz, Sacramento Bee arts critic and reporter. He was our guest today for sound advice. He brought along this great music. Edward Ortiz, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And that's Insight for today. Today's associate producers, Lynn Weaver and Liz Cazares. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. A senior producer is Jen Picard. I'm Jeffrey Callison, and we'll be back tomorrow. A new sports and entertainment venue in Sacramento's Rail Yards has been unveiled, but there are still some lingering questions, most notably how would it be financed? On the next Insight, we'll talk about this with developer David Taylor. Plus, a former homeless woman has organized a street soccer team in Sacramento. And Movies on the Big Screen presents the 7th Python this weekend. You'll meet comedian Neil Innes. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Join me for Insight.
Tomorrow morning at 10 on Capital Public Radio.